No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I'm joined by my co-host, Maria Sanchez, and together we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affects the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype your questions to BBSRADIO1. Maria is on vacation this week. She's out in the Caribbean somewhere with a lot of sunscreen on, I hope. And you're just going to have me tonight, but we have a special guest. And this should be fun. We have a gentleman with us from Heritage Radio named Jack Inslee. First, let me tell you on the statehood front that Representative Kahana from the 17th District of California has become a co-sponsor of the statehood bill in Congress. So thank you so much, Congress Representative Kahana. And that brings us up now to 121 co-sponsors, so that's pretty good. But let me bring our guest on. We're going to talk to him for a while, and then we'll move on to some current news. But Jack, are you with us?
I'm with you. How are you doing, Michael?
Great, man. How are you?
I am great. Enjoying a wonderful day here in Washington, D.C.
Oh, my God. The weather was unbelievable today.
It is. You know? It is. I'm a New York transplant, and I've been warned about the D.C. summers, but I'm enjoying this somewhat moderate climate right now.
Well, I hope you realize, Jack, now that you realize that that's fake news. We actually have wonderful weather in Washington. That's not true. In August, all those people that warned you will be saying, I told you so.
But right, exactly.
Welcome to Washington. We're happy to have you. Tell me, what is Heritage Radio?
So, Heritage Radio is something I helped launch. It is a, for lack of better descriptor, a food talk radio network in Brooklyn, New York. And, Heritage Radio features about 35 different food policy and interest podcasts per week. So they're live radio programs broadcasting from the restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. So that's kind of where I came from. And Heritage definitely has their finger on the pulse in terms of the food landscape in this country.
Well, I'll tell you, as a kid that grew up in North New Jersey, the only thing that I like more than internet radio is pizza. So, especially New York pizza. You know, New York pizza is a special kind of pizza. It's hard to find in the District of Columbia. I'll have to give you a list of places you can get it, but there are very
please.
Few. But
give me
that
list, because the jumbo slices have really discouraged me as a New York transplant to D.C.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, we have all kinds, you know, we're eclectic here. We have Connecticut pizza and everything, but nobody beats New York pizza. I'm sorry. Well, that's great. And it's great that I think the internet has been a great place to get policy out on the air and get people to think about things and get people to take action. You know, we certainly have seen, besides the Arab Spring, we've seen many movements, Black Lives Matter, all sorts of social movements that have been started and carried on the internet, the Women's March, all these things. So it's been a great vehicle. So tell us what you're going to do specifically in Washington.
Absolutely. So in Washington, I'll be starting a new radio network. It's going to be called Full Service Radio, and we will be broadcasting from the lobby of a new hotel that's opening in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C., right on 18th and Columbia. So there's a new hotel opening, and we're going to be a radio station that's right in the lobby. So you'll have glass walls, very public-facing, and we're going to have about 30 or 35 Washington, D.C. hosts hosting their own podcast every week, sort of speaking to the local issues and community projects that are happening very close by and in Washington, D.C., trying to show the B side of D.C. Obviously, D.C. is known as a very transient city, a city where politics kind of runs the city, and we'll be trying to highlight some of the other things happening in the city. So everything from food and beverage to arts and media and design, trying to paint D.C. in a different picture than it's generally painted. So it's a new media outlet at a D.C. hotel, independent, and I'm very excited to sort of kick this thing off.
Well, that's very cool. And let me tell you that this is a problem. The image you talk about is a problem for us because I travel around the country and I talk to people, and Washington, D.C. certainly has an image nationally especially that really doesn't reflect the city at all. You know, we were seen as this place for national politics, and it's true, it's the business that we're in, but there's also a city here of regular people, you know, cops, teachers, firefighters, lots of millennials, you know, all sorts of people, and we have a rich, vibrant culture, especially in food, and food, you know, is amazing in the District of Columbia. When I grew up here, I moved from New Jersey when I was a teenager, and the food scene in Washington was terrible in those days.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard to get good certain ethnic foods like Italian food, which was unusual for a big East Coast city. And you couldn't find a restaurant that was open after 9 o'clock at night. We really were kind of a sleepy southern town. But all that's changed now, as you probably well know, and we have all sorts of wonderful cuisine and a really vibrant culture here. So I think that you'll have a lot to work with. And I think it'll be, it'll be a really positive thing to get that word out there about D.C.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, this administration has made such a point to use rhetoric like drain the swamp, right?
Yeah.
And it's an easy thing to sign on to if you're not from D.C., but this is not a swamp. This is the people, this is a city where people live. This is a city where people have lived longer than any administration has been in office.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have a lot of cultural institutions that have been here for a very long time. So to just subscribe to the idea that it's a swamp and that it's full of political operatives and administration employees is just not accurate. And there's so many artists here doing incredible things, and they have been doing incredible things for a very long time. And, you know, that extends into the food and beverage community. And D.C. actually was named by Bon Appetit magazine as the top food and beverage destination in America for 2016. And I think that really says something. And there's a lot brewing here in D.C. that the rest of the country might not be aware of. And I hope that with Full Service Radio at the Line Hotel, we can illustrate some of those stories and kind of shape that narrative and change that narrative to let the rest of the world and the rest of the country know that there's a lot happening here in D.C., and there's a lot that's been happening here in D.C. prior to this administration. And, you know, it's a different place than most people might think it is. So
well, absolutely. And just, you know, just when you talk about artists, for example, if you just talk about music, we've produced people like Roberta Flack and Duke Ellington, Marvin Gaye. You know, we have a rich heritage of music in Washington, for example. And, you know, if you like gospel music, for example, we have one of the richest collection of gospel music choirs in the country. We have a lot of really cool stuff going on in the district. And yeah, we have a long history. The District of Columbia is well over 200 years old. And by American standards, that's pretty good. And we have a lot of local culture and a lot of local flavor. So that's great.
Absolutely.
So when do you start doing this?
It's the capital of the nation, and I can't understand why the capital of this nation is not known for more art, because as the capital, you would hope that we have cultural ambassadors that are sort of pushing their own narratives and, in a way, the narrative of the nation out to the world, because it's not just politics. There are a lot of fascinating people here doing incredible things that I don't think the rest of the nation is aware of.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, if you come to Washington, D.C., if you're out there listening to this and you don't live in the District of Columbia, we not only have this rich culture, but we're willing to share it with you. All the museums in the district, it's unusual to find a museum in the district which charges you anything to go in.
Right.
And you know, we have all these amazing museums between the Smithsonian, the Air and Space, the great art museums. We have the Holocaust Museum. We now have the African American Museum open on the Mall. I mean, it's just the Native American Museum. We just have a rich culture, and you can come to Washington, and in a week of roaming around Washington, you can discover the culture of a nation, because we have the culture of the whole nation here as well. So
that's right.
Yeah,
Michael. And you know, I've lived in New York for about 10-12 years, and it might sound crazy, but I think the District of Columbia is even more diverse than New York City. And I've been so blown away by so many of the people that I've met here. Not only the arts community, but all communities. And I just think that the story of D.C. is really a story that has not been told at a national level. So I'm so excited to have this platform to kind of give voice to people here that have been doing incredible things and try to push that to a national level, you know?
Well, you know, and that is part of our problem. When I go out, everybody thinks the people that live in Washington, D.C., when I go out around the country, they feel like we all work for the IRS. The truth of the matter is that more people in Virginia and Maryland work for the federal government than work for the government in the District of Columbia. And one of the things that we do here, and we do a lot of, is we work in the public interest. You know, we're people like AARP and the National Organization of Women and Planned Parenthood, but also the National Rifle Association and the, you know, it doesn't matter what, and the Heritage Foundation. It doesn't matter what side of the spectrum you're on, there's somebody in Washington working on your interests. So that would be a really positive thing to get out there. But you understand, Jack, that by saying on the radio that New York is not the center of the universe, that you've probably been banned now, and you can't go back, because New Yorkers certainly feel that, you know, there's New York, there's two types of people, that live in New York and people that want to live in New York but can't. So, but no, you're right. We've got a very diverse cultural, least significant and exciting, vibrant community here. We have 1,000 millennials moving into the District of Columbia every month.
Absolutely, Michael. And you know what? I think, and this might be controversial, but you know, in the late 90s or early 2000s, I think I can understand why New York would be the center of the world, because there was no real internet, and if you wanted a pulse on culture, pop culture, art, you had to go to New York, and we live in a post-internet world. And, you know, I don't think you need to be in New York to get that. And that's what I've learned from this experience of moving to D.C. And meeting all of the D.C. cultural leaders. And it blows me away because, you know, a lot of the artists and cultural leaders I've met here in D.C. are more earnest. They're working harder than many of the people I've met in any city across the country. And I've been blown away by the energy of D.C. and what D.C. has to offer. And I'm not so sure if the rest of the country or world knows about that and how much D.C. really has to offer, you know?
Well, that's absolutely true. And, you know, I think that what you're doing is really great, and it'll be really positive. Explain to me why in the lobby of a hotel and why the glass walls. Why do you want people to see this?
You know, I think podcasting is something that is really taking, you know, it's becoming very popular nationwide, worldwide. But I think having a podcast studio that's in the public view and in a place where the public can interact with it, really interesting and really different, because a lot of podcasts are happening in private spaces, in studios the public might not have access to, and the hotel lobby is really as close to the public as you can get. So, you know, we're going to be situated right in the lobby of this incredible hotel that'll be right on 18th and Columbia in Adams, Oregon. So, you know, I really, what I hope is that the public can walk into this lobby, can walk into the studio, share their thoughts, and be a part of the conversation. I really want it to be an open dialogue with the public. I think it's very important to kind of open those doors and let as many voices as can possibly pass through our walls as possible.
I think that's cool. And if you don't know it, if you're outside Washington and you don't know what the intersection of 18th and Columbia Road is in the District of Columbia, that's ground zero for cool. It's the you know, the coolest spot in D.C. Adams Morgan is certainly the most one of the most eclectic areas for food and entertainment and art. Georgetown, when I was growing up, Georgetown used to be the place, but now it's for years, the past 25 years, it's been Adams Morgan. And the corner of 18th and Columbia is really where it all happens in Adams Morgan. So you're in a great location in a great part of town. When do you open? I'm sorry, when does this all happen?
So this will be opening July, ideally July. You know, hotels are quite the operation, and we hope to be open by July. It absolutely should be summer of this year. And, you know, we're actually opening in, Michael, an old church. So the location that we'll be opening in was a Church of Christian Science that opened sometime around the turn of the century. It's a very fascinating location. And I've been a church for quite some time. I mean, the Knickerbocker Theater was very nearby. And as you might know, one of the largest losses of life in Washington, D.C. history was at the Knickerbocker Theater because the roof collapsed sometime around the 1920s and during a blizzard. So we lost about 150 lives right there in Adams Morgan, and the Church of Christian Science was a temporary morgue. So there's this real history to the location that we're in Adams Morgan. And the neighborhood's kind of been waiting for something to happen in this location. So, you know, thankfully the hotel was willing and ready to invest in community and culture. So that's why I'm here. And I'm just, you know, the whole idea here is to give voice to D.C., voice to the people of D.C., voice to the stories of Adams Morgan, document that history, and give the city another cultural resource and archive. So, summer, We'll be open sometime in summer, ideally July, hopefully July. These things take some time, but I'm very excited to share these stories with not only D.C., but the world.
Yeah, it again, it's very cool. And there is so much history here in Washington, and there's so many amazing people here in the District of Columbia. A lot of people don't know that. We're such a part of American history, and our story doesn't get told. I mean, most people don't understand, for example, that the man that wrote the national anthem was a member of the D.C. militia. The guy that wrote Taps and was a Congressional Medal of Honor winner from D.C. So we have a little proud, long military tradition in the city, but also art and culture and certainly food. I'm a foodie, so I'm anxious to have somebody talking about those things in the District of Columbia, and people, everybody in America should come here once at least. This is your city. This is the capital, and everybody in, no matter where you live. This shouldn't be just a place for, you know, senior trips from high school. Everybody should come out here. You should bring your family. There's so much culture. There's so much history. There's so many things to see. So that's great. So now tell us, Jack, how can people, if they want to find out more information, do you have a website?
Yeah, you know, Michael, you are kind of getting a scoop on this because it's not public. But if folks want to follow and find out more about this, you can follow me right now at Jack, J-A-C-K, Inslee, I-N-S, as in Sam, L-E-E, on Twitter. And once we get closer to summer, we're going to have a lot more information we're going to be sharing with the public. And, you know, what you say is so true, because so many people have been to D.C. maybe at, you know, on a school trip to see the monuments or with their families to see the White House or the, you know, all the beautiful monuments that we have here. But there's so much happening in D.C. And as a New Yorker, I can't stress enough just how much culture is happening here in the district. So I hope people will follow, and I hope people will kind of hop on board as we launch this summer. Full service radio, and it's at the Line Hotel. You can visit thelinehoteldc.com to get more information about that project. And once the radio station launches in the summer, Michael, I hope you'll come on and talk more, and I hope
absolutely.
The DC community will feel invited to come share their voices and their opinions. And
we'll do that, and I will encourage people in D.C. to do that too. And I'm so happy to find out that we're cutting edge here, Jack, that we're a little ahead of the curve, because, you know, I got that Trump thing wrong. I was a Hillary Clinton superdelegate, so I've got to, you know, so I got to make up for being behind the curve a little bit. But, you know, it's great. I think this is a great idea. And one of the reasons we jumped on it, Jack, is because when we read some little article about it, we thought, hey, that's really cool. So, you know, we like to have people like you on with great ideas that involve the community. And I hope you'll come back as the project develops and tell us more about it when you can.
Absolutely, Michael. And, you know, I'll share a funny anecdote. You know,
yep.
When I was in negotiations with the hotel company, about spring, you know, spring last year, and I joked and I said, you know, I hope I have an anti-Trump clause, because I'm not so sure I want to move to D.C. and uproot my life if Trump becomes president. And everybody laughed at the time, and they said, oh, my goodness, you know, of course
that's
that
not
won't happen.
Yeah.
Right. As all of us liberals did. And, you know, as I sit here now and talk to you, I'm actually energized by the current state of affairs, because we are an independent media outlet at what is a rival hotel to our commander-in-chief's business interests. And I'm very, very, very happy to be running an independent media outlet at a rival hotel because I think it's exactly what the city needs. So
yeah, I think people need to give. You know, we need to get regular people out there talking to one another. That's really the basis of this show, because the bottom line, and we're going to let you go in a second because I know you've got things to do, but we're going to talk about Donald Trump. But the real thing is not so much Donald Trump as the almost half of the nation that stands behind him. We need to find a way to come together. And this is the
Absolutely.
Way to do it, I think, you know, to have people talk to one another and talk on the air about how they feel. So, again, congratulations on this project. It sounds great. We're glad to have you here. We hope to have you back soon. Thanks for being on.
Thank you so much, Michael. And I'll leave your listeners with this. You know, we welcome everybody to Full Service Radio, and I very much hope that some of his supporters will join us, start that dialogue, and
yes.
hopefully find some common ground and some progress. So thank you
Absolutely.
So much for having me. It's an absolute honor. And I hope
well, thanks,
soon.
Jack. And we'll have you back soon. And maybe we'll even date. Well, Maria is a Trump supporter, and she's on vacation. So next time, you get to talk to a Trump supporter, too. But thanks so much for being on, and again, best of luck with the project. Anything we can do for you, let us know, and keep us informed of what's going on.
All right, Michael, thank you so much. Honored to be on.
Yeah, thanks.
All right.
So we're going to be back in a minute. Thanks, Jack Inslee, for coming on and telling us all about this cool new idea, and I hope you people in Washington, D.C., and people that come to visit will come in and see Heritage Radio at the corner of 18th and Columbia when they open in July. And maybe we can start a dialogue. But now we're going to move on a little bit, and I'm going to bring our resident political genius on the air, Doug. And Doug and I are going to talk a little bit about Donald Trump. Are you there, Doug?
I am.
All right. So we've got our, you know, everybody in America is out talking about the first 100 days of Trump. And, you know, he made a lot of promises
mm-hmm.
in the first 100 days, but he hasn't really done very well on following through on most of those promises. You know, they're out there now touting that he's put out, he's signed 29 bills. But the truth of the matter is that his main legislation, you know, the things he promised, getting rid of Obamacare, immigration, defunding Planned Parenthood, you know, the wall, the Common Core, taxes,
repatriation,
China. He hasn't really done anything with any of those things. So.
Repatriation. You're right. You look at the scenario of what he promised and what he's delivered. It's two different things, and you find that he's also doing. He's going so up and down. I shouldn't say this, but it is a little shocking to know that a man can say X and the next day can say. Why? Because of negative Z. You don't know why, because there's nothing to what he just said, but other than, oh, well, now everything's okay. Oh, now I know the truth, so I really believe this. Or I'm really not that. I'm both things at once. They ought to call him they. It's
well,
just surprising.
And then he has the nerve to follow it up when somebody quotes statistics by calling that fake news. You know, it's fake news. It's fake news
right.
that I didn't have the biggest inauguration in the history of the world, even though there were 12 people out on the mall at the time. You know, I mean, that really is a frustrating thing. But the thing that I just said to Jack is the thing that scares me most is that it's really not about Donald Trump as much as it is the 45% of America that stands behind us, behind him, and we have to find a way to bridge a gap between us. You know, today they announced that a guy in Florida won a lawsuit against him for $32,000. He's been suing Trump for years to get his money. He owns a paint store, and Trump's one of his golf courses bought $32,000 worth of paint from the guy and never paid him. So he got a settlement in court, and $300,000, the paint and his legal fees. And they were interviewing this guy, and he said, yeah, I've been fighting for this for years, because $32,000 for this man is a lunch, and it's all the world to me. And then they finished, and guess what? They said, who did you vote for? And he said, Donald Trump.
Isn't that interesting?
That's the thing. You know, there are a lot of people out there saying, I don't like this guy. I think he's unqualified. I think he's, you know, not making the right moves. But that doesn't matter. I support him anyway.
Here's the reason. And I honest to goodness feel them. I do. I feel both sides. But on the positive side for him, one, he's charismatic. Mm-hmm. Two, he really is pointing out flaws inherent within, you know, a system that's dynamically driven by a media point of view versus any other point of view. So he's bringing a lot of things to bear. And, you know, it's almost like most of the people that want him in right now just want such a desire to see government not squeeze them so bad. When you have a wiping out of the middle class, they lash out at everybody. And the last administration had a long run, 8 years. So, of course, it's easy to blame them. And for a person who wants change, they were willing to go with anybody. I've got to be honest, right. Anybody. And here you've got a charismatic guy. Most people follow charisma. It's, right. You know, CEOs of companies, they're charismatic. They take you out to lunch and do big deals, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, they've just released a survey. They've had a lot of surveys lately, but one of them that I found really interesting was that 20% of the people that voted for him said that he was unqualified, but they didn't care. Exactly what you're saying.
Right.
They so wanted to change.
Right.
And what bothers me as a liberal is that Trump keeps saying the election's over and we need to deal with it, but we're not getting that message as liberals. The election is over.
But look at the neocon line. What was the neocon line? I mean, what is the line that the Republican hard right really utilized in the past? And that's there's no failure, basically, right? You just keep on going as hard as you can. You move through the obstacle. You don't give in. You have a principle and you move towards it regardless. And you bend everything to the will of that. And it was a very hardcore stance. And maybe the Democrats in their way are now starting to realize that, you know, they have to take it to this level, and they can. And it might be effective. The only problem is, even though you'd think, yeah, maybe you could bring a lot of people together, create riot, create change, everybody gets up, and maybe that's a way to do things, but ultimately it's making the Democrats look really bad. I mean, right now, I think only 30% of the population, you know, really think that the Democrats are doing the right thing here.
Wow.
And that's because they've never really condemned this sort of, bad tactics.
Well, and you know, one of certainly the Achilles heel that I've seen in the 40 years that I've been in liberal democratic politics is the pomposity of liberal Democrats. You know, we really do talk down to people. You know, you don't know what you're talking about, so let me explain it to you.
Right.
Or you don't really want a gun. You're
right.
Just too dumb to realize that.
Right.
So let me explain to you why you don't want one and don't need one. Instead of sitting down at the table and saying, okay, you have a Second Amendment right, but let's figure out something where we can keep people safe and still protect your rights.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that dialogue, and we need to start that dialogue. And what I don't see on the liberal side is I don't see that happening. I see the liberals standing up saying, we're not going to let this guy do anything. Just like the conservatives stood up and said, we're not going to let Obama do anything.
Right.
You know, the Speaker of the House even said, sure, my job is to keep him from doing anything. You know, but it seems to me that now the situation is reversed and we stand in the same position. So somebody's got to put on the big boy pants.
Right.
I think it should be us. I think we need to, without compromising our position, we need to stand up, and I think we need to trust also in the institutions that we have in place, like the court system. You know, he put together the travel ban, the court stopped it. So, you know, we need to be firm, but I think we also need to be flexible.
I do agree. In some, you see, but now you're making a point on some way towards even the way Trump operates, in that, you know, he's twisting on a dime, so he could say, well, I'm flexible to the situation, right? So he's not really principled. He could say, I'm flexible. That's what you need to be. I think there's a lot of principles that are being held by a more elect few within Congress that have more push and sway over so many others. I think there's a driving conscious awareness that, you know, we all mean something on this globe. You know, not just me, I. You get in a different, you know, mindset when it comes to that moving forward. So, and I think America is going to go through a lot more drastic change. And in each cycle, you know, that whether it's the Republicans creating their, you know, riots or the Democrats, there's always seems to be an elevation in that. Just like there's an elevation in the amount of money it costs to be president. You know, next year it's not going to be $2 billion; it's going to be five. Yeah. I mean, in next election, $5 billion, let's say. But we can expect that. Just like we can expect if some team uses dirty tactics, the other one's going to use dirty tactics times two. So you're right. Nobody. Nobody wants to put on their big boy pants and stop.
And it is part of it. You're absolutely right. Is the process itself? You know, my wife and the people around me that love me take politics harder than I do. You know, I get beat up a lot in public, and you know, my issue gets beat up. And you know, I always say to Pat, look, I'm in the NBA. I'm playing politics at a top level. And if you don't want an elbow thrown, you shouldn't be in politics. You know, because that's the way the game's played.
They
throw their elbows, and there's no way to stop that. But there's to totally end it. But there's a thing now that seems to be going on, and Republicans, I heard them say this time and time again on the news shows lately, and there's at least a modicum of truth to it, and that is that it's gotten to the point where if you want to have a dialogue with the Republicans or you want to have a dialogue on Capitol Hill, then you're chastised by your team.
Right.
It's actually like two teams out there. So, you know, somebody wants to sit down with the Republicans, and all the liberal Democrats jump on them and say, what are you doing? You should be resisting. And whereas resistance is part of the process, to a certain extent, there really needs to be a compromise in places that you know, we don't see it anymore. You know, you used to have people like Bob Dole, who's a Republican, and Ted Kennedy, a liberal Democrat, and they were buddies. You know, they fought in the Senate, but they had a personal relationship. I don't see any of that in Washington anymore.
Really?
Yeah, and if you don't know each other, how are you going to sit down and work things out? I think there has to be coming together. One of the things that impressed me about Jack's idea of putting this radio station, you know, in a hotel lobby in Chicago, in the Wrigley Building, there's been a radio station, I think, forever, a talk radio station. Don't know if they're AM or FM, but they're there in the bottom of the Wrigley Building, and people can just walk in off the street, and you know, and they say, I want to talk about such and such, and if whoever the host of the show is wants to talk about it, they have them on the air. You know, and I think it's a really positive thing because it'll bring, you know, that He's really not doing anything that you and I aren't doing, but he's just doing it in public. And I think that's that'll be a positive thing to get people to sit down. And I hope, as he said, he gets both people from Trump supporters and Clinton supporters, liberals and conservatives.
There were two great ideas come to mind. One, we got to have a weekly senator barbecue where everybody must attend, sponsored by the public, because that's probably one good place where a tax dollar would go to bring you guys all together. You know, you got to have a slogan. Try the alternative and sit down with us. Try the alternative.
Try the alternative. It's, you know, Coke is it is a slogan. Not drinking. Come on over, sit down, have a Coke, and let's talk. You know, we need something like neither side sucks or something like that. I don't know.
You know,
but
the
we'll
culture.
Work on it. You know, you're the idea guy. You know, and I'm willing to flip the hamburgers if they're willing to have a barbecue.
Well, you know, they teach you in school how to manage. I mean, most politicians probably took a lot of political science, but I'm sure they took something like a business management course, right? And you talk about how do you change a culture in a government. So one thing, I think it's the culture. And you're right. How do you put it? So in many ways they do, but how do you get that culture to kind of change? That would be the dynamic you'd have to look at. And maybe you do approach it as kind of a business. You know, usually, by the way, the culture is a product of management from the top down. So you don't really have that sort of autonomy. And even in political cycle today, I mean, you have two camps that, you know, browbeat the person who stands out in their camp and doesn't tote the party line. So the culture isn't, you know, have an opinion and share it and teach us and let's all grow together.
Right. Right. No, I agree. And I think what you're seeing, too, is a coming together of both, let's call them methodologies, or both, both paradigms, in that, you know, you see what happened to United Airlines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they drug a guy off the plane, right? And they somebody filmed it on their
lucky
iPhone.
Devil. Lucky
and
devil.
Right. And so their stock plummeted. So they, you know, as a business, they're now being subjected to the politics mm-hmm. of what they do mm-hmm. as a business. And, you know, political people are having the same thing happen to them in the sense that they need to be accountable for the business end of what they're doing, the efficiencies and the other things that they can get from business. So maybe if we could find a way to synthesize the two to some extent, that would be a positive thing. You know, the big thing in politics, though, is there's no bottom line.
Mm.
You know, you're in business. I used to be in business. And we all understand that if you and I come together over an idea and you're making money and I'm making money, it's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
In politics, how much money you make or what the idea may be or how much money you save sometimes really isn't the issue. The issue is the underlying politics and who gets the money and where does the money come from and how does it get distributed.
Right.
And that's a whole different thing. That's a whole different ball of wax.
The machine that runs it.
Yes. And, you know, these guys, that's another thing, too. We as politicians have to take responsibility for being stand-up, for, you know, standing up for America, standing up for our constituents, being an example to people. You know, if you don't want to, if you want to chase your secretary around the desk and you know, do everything like these Fox News guys have been doing, get into another line of business. Don't go into politics. Don't go into a place. You know, I just, maybe I'm wrong, but I just can't see George Washington chasing the secretary around. You know what I mean? I think, you know, maybe he did. I don't know, but it just seems to me, you know, I just can't see Abraham Lincoln saying, hey, baby, come over here and sit on my lap. You know, I think that he was worried about keeping America together. And these guys have been, you know, John F. Kennedy used to say that, to that which is much has been given, much is expected. And this is what I want to say to all America.
That's a good one.
There's not an American that much hasn't been given to. Just by being born in this country and having the opportunities, or coming to this country and having the opportunities that we have here, much has been given to us. So much should be expected of us, that we stand up and that we work together to resolve our problems. I would really, really like to do that. And I can tell you, if there were more people like Doug in the world, the world would be a better place. And this is why I'm announcing that I've accepted the position of the chairman of the Doug for President campaign. We'll be accepting money soon, so we'll let you know about that. But, yeah, we need somebody to get up there, you know, to shake these guys and go, come on, step up to the plate and do what you're supposed to.
Boy, I tell you, sometimes there's that guy in the crowd. You go to a party in, like, say, Norway, and you get that, I mean, or in Germany, and you get that at a crowd of 1,000, you get that one Norwegian or that Dane that just comes in and jumps on tables, and everybody finally gets excited. It takes a certain personality, and it's probably the personalities of the people who have the most power that really, they need somebody to go over there and sit on their laps and spank them and say,
well, there you go.
Yeah.
You just wrote your own campaign slogan. Vote for Doug, he's a Viking. I love it. Vote for Doug, he's a Viking. I can see you with the little hat with the horns on it, and, you know, I mean, I think it'll work.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
America, thanks, Doug, for being with us, with me again tonight. We
Thank
hope Maria,
you.
I think Maria is coming back next week, and we'll be back on the air. But I want to play, you know, I'm a hippie. I'm now an old hippie, which is a little pathetic. But you know, I grew up in the 60s, and we really did believe that we could all get together and make a better world. And I hope that everybody out there listening can come together around that idea and reach out to somebody on the other side, try to listen as well as talk, and work together, because America is a wonderful place. It's worth saving. It's worth making it thrive. It's worth, I wouldn't say make America great again, because America's always been great. But let's keep it great and find a way to work together. And so we're going to leave you tonight with a song by the Youngbloods for all you old hippies out there that believe that there was a better world ahead of us. I still believe that. And I hope you join us next week, and we'll continue the conversation. Thanks, America.
Love is but a song we sing, fears that we will die. You can make mountains.
In the capital of this nation, 100 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.